So for those who don't know, if you're not living here in Austin, one of the things that is absolutely true, and I think everybody will back me up on this, is that pretty much from January on, this whole city, at least anybody who cares about music, is focused on what's going to happen in March.
I totally thought you were going the allergy route.
Well, no, I mean,
That is a good. That's another
I
thing.
mean, maybe that's an allegory. But yeah, so South by Southwest happens in March. And I actually think this year one thing that they're doing right is they're pushing it a little bit further back in the month. So,
oh, so it's not going to be the last Arctic blast of the year.
I don't know. Who knows, man?
Time.
It's seriously, like, that's what we've been seeing. But in honor of South by Southwest, well, one thing that I wanted to share was my good friend of mine and a friend of the show, a loyal listener.
Since like day one.
Since day one, Mr. Mike Stevens, who not only listens to the show, but I tell the fellas occasionally gives me notes, and I was like, well, I can't fix it now. anyway, but Mike sent some
in
ideas.
In response to the show that just went up.
Yeah, in response to the show which was the last one that he just heard was the Sonic Youth show. So put that in your memory bank.
What was it about the Sonic Youth show in particular that made him think of?
I don't think it was just that. I think it was that he had listened to the podcast because it broke today, and then also he got a mailer from South By. Like, pretty much if you've ever been on the South By Southwest mailing list, you're on it forever. I mean, I assume that you can opt out. Yeah, you can move, but I mean, like, but the mailings will.
But nobody wants to admit that, you know, if you get off the South by Southwest mailing list, then you have to really admit that you have moved to the suburbs.
Right, exactly. It's like the beatings will continue until morale improves. But anyway, so he sent me a list of a few ideas for panels. The first one is called Breaking Branding, Keeping Your Frat Covertly Racist in the Era of Modern Social Media.
And we should say that, I mean, everybody should know that happened, that what the fraternity that...
Yeah, what was the college?
University of Oklahoma. Oh, shocker.
Yeah.
Well, those Sooners always seemed like such reasonable people to me.
Yeah. I just saw that their biggest signing, the biggest off-season commit, five-tool athlete, like, just... completely decided to go to another school today after all that stuff broke. So,
ooh.
Yeah, Schadenfreude from my part.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a UT Longhorn and all of our bitter rivals.
But even aside from that, I mean, right, yeah, they are our collectively.
Sports talk aside, and bear in mind, these are all tongue-in-cheek. They're not actual panels. And by the time that you heard...
Perhaps they should be.
Yeah, by the time that you've heard the show, they'll probably would have been over if they'd been real panels anyway, but they're not. Another one that he suggested was, As Cool As I Am, The History of South by Southwest is Told Through Yelp Reviews. my favorite, and the one that I would actually have gone to if it existed, was Why Norm MacDonald Won Twitter. I mean... I don't know if any of you read the series.
Oh, about the SNL 40?
Yeah. It was like, I thought it was captivating.
Incredibly amusing.
Yeah, really great. And a lot of inside baseball just about the way that whole thing worked. And, like, it really sounds like these guys were flying by the seat of their pants. So I thought that was cool. Anyway, those are the ones that I want to share. But
I appreciate Mike. I want to say that Kevin read that to us, and they made us laugh so hard. We all just agreed we had to talk about that on the air.
Well, and I wanted to use it as a launching off point because one of the things that Shane mentioned today was that we didn't that usually we like to open the show by talking about current events, but it's difficult to do that in a vacuum, especially when South By's getting ready in it.
Yeah, South by Southwest like Kevin was saying, takes over the city for 2 months. I think we should all talk about some South By stories.
Well, I've actually got one that can lead into something else that you brought up before we got going, is that I met Lars Ulrich during South By. It may have been like when I was running around with you, but I don't think you were with me at the time. But A, he's quite diminutive. This is the drummer for Metallica.
Oh, I think I've heard this story before.
He's tiny. And he had just the most smoking hot women with him you've ever seen. One on each arm. They both seemed to be pretty much with him, and he seemed very pleased with himself. He was super nice.
Can you, now we've touched on this before, Ryan, but can you at least share your favorite promotional material that you ever received during South by Southwest?
I don't know if I know what you're referring to.
The lyrical content that we
I know what he's referring to.
Oh, you're talking about the
it's actually
pretty good. I think you've mentioned this in three or four episodes. Yes.
It has,
but it needs to come up again.
Well, it is coming up to on that time, and it was me and you running around, and I think we both got a CD, but it was a couple of it'd probably now be considered juggalos, but at that time it was just white rappers when that was really, really uncool. But they were super amped to be there and handing out CDs to everybody.
Was their name Squint?
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it was Squint.
God, that's awesome. That's part of the story.
Your place and listen to it, and the little nugget came up with which was
this is some of
the lyrical content.
Yeah.
If you step to me with your bullshit, I'm gonna have to ask you please to quit.
Genius. The guy, you know, and I want to, later we'll compare those lyrics to the lyrics of Lupe Fiasco, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
Lupe wishes he could come up with
that. I know he does. I have a few more South by stories I want to tell, but let's introduce everybody and play some music before we do that.
So, plan.
All right, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
If somebody likes it. To say this before Mark, you're back.
Mark, I'm back.
Back in Kevin's garage. Does that flip?
Wow, yeah, this was kind of a shock, actually.
Yeah.
Thank God there's a hole in the ceiling.
Well, it really comes down to one immutable fact, and that is that I didn't feel like boxing up the equipment. So we may. It's tough to do with the teeny tiny kid around. So we may move back to Mark's garage next week. But or the week after, we're kicking around the possibility of some fun stuff that we won't tell you about just yet. But
it's kind of cool when we do that stuff, even if we're just going back and forth between Kevin and Mark's garage, because I still feel like I'm on location. Like, hey, this is an event. Like,
we got craft services here. We got some porter. I got some beef jerky.
You got some beef jerky.
Craft services.
So we were before. The music, we were telling South by Southwest stories, and I know everybody here's got some. Kevin, do you want to share one of those?
I don't know. Yeah, the one that always sticks out to me is not my own story. The one that always sticks out to me is like when Ryan brought that, I thought it was a cassette, but maybe you're right, it was a CD.
It was a CD.
And then we would sit around and have beers, and we would break down everything that was ironic in a totally unintended, terrible way about that. Like, so it's like, it's this rapper, and you know, basically the skinny with that guy is, you know, he's a little offended at the way that you're stepping to him. And
if,
so,
if you step to me
with your bullshit,
I'm going to have to ask you, please,
please, sir,
just cut it up.
Also,
I need to appeal to your best.
Your sense of humanity.
Yes. It's very formal in a way. Like,
that's what we were always
to me.
That's the thing we were always
for
saying.
For goodness sake.
Good day, sir.
I said good day.
Which is what my ex-boss said to me when I quit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I said good day.
Well, anyway,
I don't know who the fuck's going to wait on your 20 people, but I'm leaving right now. Good day, sir.
Did you quit that job in 1890? So, one of my favorite.
Time to just hitch up your pantalones.
You're wearing an impressive
choppers.
Your breeches.
One of my favorite stories at South by Southwest was. We went one year Morrissey was playing, and there were a group of us. We were meeting Matt Munoz, who's been on the show a few times, and Marcus Rice. I was with Marcus Rice, who will be on the show soon. Part of us were walking to where Morrissey was going to be playing. We were going to get there really early, and Derek, a good friend of mine, and my friend Jeff were together, and they decided to take a pedicab. And Derek wanted them, he kept saying, pedal faster, pedal faster, pedal faster. And then they eventually pedaled so fast that they wrecked and flipped them out of the pedicab. They were totally fine. But we saw all this commotion. We're like, oh my God, those poor people. And then we see like Derek and Jeff, they're very straggly characters, like running up to the, like, we're here, we're here. We just got in a wreck with our pedicab, but we made it.
I always feel like I end up getting a pedicab during South by Southwest. It's like some 112-pound dripping wet girl who's like going up a hill, and she looks like she's probably going to die. And we've got a few beers in us, and I'm thinking, I'm heavier today than I was yesterday. This can't be good.
A lot of pedicabs at South by Southwest.
My only really interesting story for the last 5 or 6 years has been that I was shooting, and when I say shooting, I used to do a lot of music photography. I was shooting OMD at Stubbs.
Wait, when this is in?
This was 2012 or 13.
They're a band.
Yeah.
I was going to say, was South by Southwest around in 85?
Actually, yeah, I think it was, yeah. So I'm shooting the band, and they come out, and they start into their first song, and then there's a commotion behind me. And that's when one of these boom cranes had, like, collapsed and fallen into the crowd.
Oh, my God.
And, like, gashed several people's heads wide open. And, Jesus. Like, you know, this whole thing. And then, I mean, that's, you know, yeah, it's an interesting story. It's not funny or anything.
I think we're just going to tell stories about mutual destruction.
But I ended up having to give depositions to lawyers and all this stuff. So it was a memorable event.
One particular South by story that I'll briefly touch on is when I, Mark was here for this. I ran into Jeffrey Tambor coming out of the men's room at a local venue. And suffice it to say, it's kind of a running gag between a few of my friends, of whom Mark is one, that if we run into famous people, that we should try to talk them into doing the 20x2 show, which is the little thing that we do during Interactive. And the joke on that is that, like, it never works. Like, they're here, they've got a very specific schedule, or it's like after the event, or you can't get to them, or like whatever. Anyway, but it's not unusual at all to run into people of some fame. And so anyway, he was walking out of the Louvre, and Mark and I and some other friends of ours are standing around, and I was like, hey, it's Pop-Pop. And so anyway, we just walked right up to him and chatted for a second. He was clearly like, I wouldn't say that he was annoyed, but he wasn't pleased. And then I went to shake his hand, and instead of shaking my hand, he wiped his hands on my jacket. So,
and what did he say?
He said, "I have lotion on my hands." And so
I'm wiping it on your jacket.
And so I was like, "That is impolite." But
I will say in that same vein, I had a really nice chat with David Cross, and he's the one who broke it to me, which I in turn had to break it to my then girlfriend, who was much more into Arrested Development than I was, that it was canceled. And yeah. So
wasn't it canceled like every season?
My girlfriend loves Arrested Development so much. He's like, well, I got bad news for her. What are you gonna do?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned 20x2. You're gonna
and
be doing
bad news.
Oh, no.
Well,
on that note,
yeah, it is possible that this will break. It will likely break after the 20x2 show is over. At any rate, that's something. It'll be our 15th year at South by Southwest. We're super excited about it. And maybe we'll share a little bit afterwards. But speaking of David Cross, one of the guys who's going to do the show is the founder of Stand Up Records out of Minneapolis. And they put out all the David Cross stuff. They do Patton Oswalt, and anyway, I'm super excited. What's fascinating is that guy doesn't spend any time on stage, and so he's kind of nervous about it.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah,
it is. It really is. And so I was like, I think you're going to do great, and I do think he'll be fine, but it is funny that he likes being the dude behind the scenes. So South By is full of stories like that. We could go on and on and on.
That's analogous to, like, if you're, you know, filming porn, and then you're the cameraman, and then one day somebody doesn't show up, and you have to go in and fill in. I mean, I would be a little nervous if it were me.
I don't know that that's the term.
It is not analogous to that. Nervous is not the term, because I would be a little nervous.
I do know that when I found out, like, that we actually have people who listen to the show, and apparently it's more than a couple, like, I immediately
high four of you.
I immediately thought of like yeah, all of them yeah, in yeah. one place at the same time, and it's freaking me out. And I just more or less got.
Wait, did you out, like? Did you smoke some weed when you thought that?
I
like, was it one of those things?
Weird out.
I don't need to smoke weed to get paranoid it up, dude.
I don't know.
No, I get stage fright. I have no problem like booking a show that hundreds of people show up to, but I don't want to be on stage.
It just was surprising to me. And it just goes to show you that some people are wired in different ways. And I am I'm not at all burned out because not everybody has gotten to town yet. And it's like, there's always that one radio station here that reads all the outgoing flights on the air on like Sunday morning. They're like, don't miss your plane. So
really, I've never heard that.
Yeah. It's exciting when people come to town. It's also kind of, you know, you're probably ready for it to be over when the 10 days are done, but we're excited about it at this point.
Yeah, I'm always excited about it. I don't do as much stuff now. You know, I go off and on and off and on. I mean, I played it for many, many, many years in a row and then needed to take some time off.
Well, do you want to talk about our name tags?
What was it? Like?
I think it was, well, you were like, what, budding rock star?
I was like important budding rock star.
Oh,
budding
yeah.
rock star. I was smarmy ass-kissing manager, and his girlfriend was trophy
girlfriend. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? It's crazy because we were joking around. We went to some – that was the first year that this was like – I mean, things were flush. It was before the dot-com – or no, it was right around when the dot-com like burst – the bubble burst.
You're talking about that year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been like 99 or something.
No, 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 it was like
98.
No, 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 it was like 2000. Yeah, 2000. There were fountains and fountains and rivers of free liquor everywhere, and we were like, okay, we'll go to all of it and drink all of it. But we put on these little "Hello, I am" stickers, ha ha ha, trying to amuse ourselves. And I swear to God, we got more.
Oh, we met more people.
We met more people through those stickers than anything I've ever done since.
Do you remember what shirt you were wearing when we met up at the convention center that year?
No,
it was. Damn. I think either Nathan had given it to you or you just bought it. But it was an Onion T-shirt. It said, "I'm a member of a promising local band."
Yeah. With the thing that said important budding musician. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, guys. So South by Southwest is happening. This is our pre-South by Southwest show. Can't wait to see. It's like right now, and every year you forget. It's kind of like, again, Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football. You know, you always forget. It sounds so much fun. We'll meet back in 10 days. Or,
oh, at the end of it, if I fully engage with it, all I want to do is like lie on a bed with no sound whatsoever, and just
away from everything.
Yeah, right? And this is not a Depeche Mode reference, but and just enjoy the silence.
Yes,
and a few memories occasionally come back. You know, you just wince. Like, oh.
Well, yeah, if you find yourself in the middle of a few too many elbows, it's like, I can just buy a beer and be someplace quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe that's me showing my age. But
it's fun, but if you're going to do it, you have to go all in and do it. But now the thing is that, you know, if you're in Austin, and for the, you know, the city cut down on it this year with the restricting permits, but there's so many parties tangentially connected, free stuff, free music, 24 hours a day. You know,
it's an alcoholic music lover's playland.
Yeah, 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 it's Disneyland for adults.
So here's my question. Is today's featured artist going to be here for South
Lupe?
I don't know that. That's a good...
And also...
Maybe we should announce who today's featured artist is.
Well, I said it a minute ago, but...
No, I wasn't here.
A minute ago?
He wasn't mentally.
He wasn't
here in spirit.
Yeah, it's Lupe Fiasco. So I picked Lupe Fiasco.
Lupe or Lupe?
Lupe.
Lupe.
I just like to...
I just kind of like calling him Lupe.
But you know why I say that? Because I used to work with a guy. I used to work with a guy that called himself... Or no. It wasn't... It was his sister's name was Lupe, and he called her Lupe. And like ever since then, it's just stuck in my head.
Fiasco.
That sounds like either the...
It's Lupe Fiasco.
Disney version or the drunk version of that.
Or both.
Yeah.
I might watch a movie called Lupe Fiasco.
Also,
that sounds like something like there's got to be a dog involved, and there's got to be Jim Belushi's in it.
So before we get going down the road of Mr. Fiasco, I kind of wondered that to that point, like, if that guy goes to the DMV or whatever, you know, does that Because I would like to be sitting in the if ever you have to sit in the Department of Motor Vehicles and get your license renewed or whatever, it'd be great to sit in there with a room full of people named stuff like Loopy Fiasco.
Kevin, I hate to break this to you, but I'm pretty sure that's not his birthday.
You think it's a stage name?
It's a stage name.
I am crestfallen.
I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. Yeah.
Oh, Lupe? Yes. Yeah.
That's the one he's changed, Luca.
Fiasco, that's the family.
So, you know, but here's something that's interesting on his Wikipedia.
It was wrong, Fiasco.
On his Wikipedia.
Cat and Rob.
That's what I'm going as for Halloween.
On his Wikipedia page, here's his, I'm going to show this to Ryan, here's his birth name. Just wait.
Okay.
Just read that. Okay, here it says what his stage name is. And look where they give you...
The pronunciation?
They give you the pronunciation for Lupe.
Like I needed that?
But not for, and I don't know, is it Wasalu Muhammad Jaco or Yako? I don't know.
You got me.
But they do let you know on Wikipedia that Lupe is pronounced Loopay.
Lupe.
Thank you for clearing that up, Wikipedia.
Yes, Wikipedia, as usual, it's quite useful. So, yeah, tonight I picked Lupe Fiasco's Tetsuo and Youth. We've done a few hip-hop albums on the show, but all of them, I think, were all recorded or released in 1988 or 89. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's just in a small, like, tight little period there.
When it was nascent.
Comparatively.
That was
a
pivotal time in hip-hop.
Well, that was really when we talked about this before, that's when, in my mind, like, right, 88, 89, those were the years, I mean, Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul.
It was while you could still sample at will.
Mm-hmm.
And things were getting really creative, and it was moving away from, you know, Fresh Prince and Dougie Fresh to, you know, your Public Enemy and...
What have you.
You know, your East Coast...
MC What Have You.
MC What Have You, yes.
is that your...
MC What Not.
Yes.
Moniker? Your stage moniker?
MC What Have You and the et ceteras. That's my...
You, that should have been you in the, like, 1994,
right,
when irony was really, really in.
Is irony out now?
No, thank you.
It was briefly cool.
When it was... Okay, so anyway, so this Lupe Fiasco character, I've been somewhat a fan of for years now.
Apparently I'm the last person on Earth to have never heard of this dude.
I think that would be me, actually.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, what time did you listen to the album today?
Oh, well, then maybe you were the last. Listen to
it last week. Well, all right, I'll say what I thought about this in a minute, but Ryan, I want to hear what you thought about it.
Well, it was amazing. Well, and the reason I say that I'm the last person on Earth is that I talk to people at work, like, have you ever heard of this Lupe Fiasco? And then, like, they all had opinions. Oh, yeah. Like,
that guy is swell.
Yes, yeah, he was the bee's knees. But no, I thought it was fantastic. He successfully integrates all sorts of different styles that you think wouldn't work together. I mean, like Miles Davis style jazz to like bluegrass.
There's some banjo in this.
There's some banjo.
Harmonica.
And like it's fantastic. It's probably the best record that we covered that I'm probably never going to listen to again because there's an uncomfortable amount of the N word in there.
Yeah,
I just
there really
don't
is.
Know how to handle it.
It's a difficult listen no matter what. I mean, my favorite couple of songs on this record, like the stuff with the mixing of the banjo and the harmonica, and I appreciate that, but I don't necessarily want to listen to it. And the stuff that I thought was the best...
Well, okay, this kind of kept going on in my head as I was listening to it. I don't know if there's a difference between rap and hip-hop, but there definitely is between rap and R&B, and like he definitely integrates a lot of R&B into like a sort of hip-hop palette.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you get a lot of times when you'll see songs that'll be like so-and-so featuring so-and-so. When you have like an outside person, see like the confluence. So-and-so
featuring
so-and-so.
So-and-so.
Yeah, it's another mid-90s irony-laden.
Sure.
But I mean, it gets experimental at times.
You know, it's
the dude takes a lot of chances, and they all pretty much work.
It's a frustrating listen for me personally. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But I really felt like there is a song called "Little Death," and there's parts in it where there's this like repeating like stand up bass line, and then it almost sounds like post-apocalyptic a la Radiohead, like, okay, computer stuff going on in the production, going on in the background, just really sparse and like it's hard to explain, like a building falling down.
Everything at the wall.
Well, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting about this record is that apparently this was the last of his, apparently he had a pretty tumultuous relationship with Atlantic Records. This was the last record that was part of that deal. And so I would kind of think, it doesn't matter how adventurous you are, like probably more musicians than not would probably turn in a
less
just
than stellar,
get this like, yeah, the fuck out of like yeah, just be done with it and like everybody call it a day. And instead what he did was really swing for the fences over and over again and take all kinds of crazy stylistic chances and make things like probably 2 or 3 or 4 times as difficult as they could have been.
But I mean, that's one of the interesting things that I think about this is that, it was exciting. Like, there are songs on here that are so exciting to me. Like, the first song, Mural, is just, he's just going. And I'm relatively familiar with this guy's career. And I've heard him come up, like, his style of rapping change. And I've heard it come from this, like, really, this, it's more like a, it's kind of like, kind of mirrored what Kanye's done, too. Like, faster and a little more aggressive and a little more tension built into it. A lot of wordplay in there. When I'm listening to some of this stuff, you can hear there's so much tension built into it for me. Like there's so much, you know what? I'll tell you what, why don't we listen to a clip of this? I want to listen to a little clip from Mural and I want to talk about it when we come back and we'll circle around and restart that. So, this is going to be a Mural by Lupe Fiasco. Oh, no. According to Wikipedia, Lupe.
Yeah. What tastes like hot dogs and tear drips? It looks like pantomime and clear bricks. It smells like shotguns and deer piss. They on a hunt, kind of salty that I'm going hard. First part of a party that I throw in pods. 1 minute you playing pool, next minute you throwing darts. But that's how you do with a party that you throwing bars. I run the gambit like I'm throwing cards. Popular mechanics to overdosing hard. Paint cold pictures like Nova Scotia landscapes. Nerd gang with Mandelbrot sets when we handshake. Word game back up. Plan that can damn licks back up. The word plane plan that the man states means I can still be the man if the dam breaks. And when demand breaks, some reflections what they can't face. But Pyrrha still treat the mirror like it's a fan base. The unfettered veteran, the eagle feathered man of medicine that hovers above cities like weathermen. Maybe weather woman, whatever better to tell you. Weather coming. I prefer girls to rain all over the world. And not rain like Rain Man, or rain like Rain Dance, or rain like a slight chance of rain when it's rain and rain like Deer Slaves to Santa Claus, Slave Man, but rain like queens that reign over May Man. And not queen like Queen Killer, Rhapsody, Bohemian Queen, but queen like White Glove, Wave Hand. And I wave hand like it's a heat wave, so you make a fan by waving your hand. I'm talking wave like you saying, hey, man. And not hate for horses and horses like you almost.
So I love that. Like there's so many funny things. Like that song I think shows his, and you know, during the intermission I had everybody listen to Kick Push off his first album.
Not the actual intermission that we do in the middle of the show, but
just the break. Just the break. Right?
The intervening moments.
Yeah, bad choice of words.
But
for
no, you were right. Like he has evolved.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, you know, that song has a lighter, and not just evolved, but he's just better at what he does.
Well, he's got better flow now. He puts a lot more words into a smaller space of time.
It sounds like his mouth and tongue muscles are more toned. Does that make sense?
He's like
Mark is laughing at me, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Though he's like an NBA All-Star of rap now, whereas back then he was like in the D-League.
No, back then he was the number one draft pick.
That means.
Well, okay.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
I'm just. Yeah,
you know, you take Dr. Dre versus Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg clearly is a more skilled rapper. than Dr. Dre is.
It's really like intern
undeniable
Dr. Dre.
Yeah. So he's gone from being, you know, and I don't know what, you know, I don't know dick all about hip hop, by the way.
Then don't try, then don't.
Probably obvious. But no, he has certainly developed, if, you know, if you're talking about like flow being like the metric that you're shooting for, he's got it now, and he didn't necessarily.
And he didn't, but what he did have then, I mean, he had great lyrics again. He did have a good sense of, I mean, he did have a good sense of flow there, but now he just knocks it out of the park. But you can see like how, and this is something like if you go back if you listen to his last two records, he got really militant for a while. He's definitely a social commentator, and that's sort of
just reminded me of a really
he's a social
terrible,
commentator.
No, it just reminded me of a really terrible joke though. Just reminded me of.
Sorry, I had an itch. I was scratching.
No, it was like on a greeting card. It was like this little princess potato has her king and queen mom potato.
Wait, princess
like,
potato.
Hey, can I marry Dan Rather? And it's just the say no, honey. He's just a commentator.
Yeah. Oh, okay. He's just a cop. You know what? I should say the rest of this. He's a social commentator. Sorry, I had an itch.
That's
on the back
already
of my head.
Taken up too much of everybody.
Okay. So, Kevin, you had something to read. I'm sorry. The last thing that I wanted to say, I just want to make this point because I'll totally forget. He came from one point, and he's kind of crossing back over a little bit into like an outside observer rather than a participator. At least that's what I get in this record from what I'm listening to. And that song Mural, he's back to a sense of humor in there. He's throwing stuff around about like Queen, not Queen, not Bohemian Rhapsody Queen, but Queen with white glove waving Queen or. You guys,
I think there's a lot of that in this whole album. I think there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek.
I don't know how much, and I get snippets here and there of like something that kind of amused me, but I don't know that the lyrics necessarily, the content of them, are that important. It's more like, you know, that he's just kind of creating like a sound collage of words.
I mean, we'll talk about this later, but definitely not when you get into Prisoner 1 and 2 and Deliver.
Well, okay, yeah, I mean, something about the pizza deal.
So, Kevin, what were you?
Yeah, well, I guess there are a few things. One, in particular, I do what I usually do, and I found a couple of, like, I always like to find what has been written on the record and sort of see what the consensus is, or if there is a consensus, and sometimes you kind of get the impression that a lot of these reviewers read each other. With this one, I didn't necessarily get that impression at all. But this is a little bit from the Review and Consequences Sound, and I thought this was particularly interesting. And I'll just paraphrase a little bit here. He said, this reviewer said, he's calling his fifth album a masterpiece, point blank, and with some of the densest verses ever and a handful of 8 or 9 minute songs, it's hard to imagine him calling it anything else. Lupe has described the album, which might not have come out at all if not for the group of hackers who demanded Atlantic give it a release date, as lyrics on top of lyrics on top of lyrics, which I think totally describes that last track. And I just think it's fascinating that the anonymous people,
In addition to trying to, you know, like save the world through political action,
They just have some records that they like, and they want to know when they're coming out.
Yeah, Atlantic, like, fucking do this.
And so Atlantic went, okay,
all right.
But anyway, So you know, that's the thing too. And I read another piece where he was interviewed, and he was talking about how. He mentioned, like, kind of point blank that he was probably a little bit past his prime, and he's like, I just don't capture the imagination of 12-year-olds the way that I used to, and I guess that's
really,
like,
that's okay,
people with,
dude.
Well, no, sure, you and I agree on that, but I think the idea is that a lot of those guys, I think what he was acknowledging, or the impression I got, was that there's a lot of discretionary income among people who buy what their friends will buy, and nobody does that more than preteens and people right in that age.
And we will get to that when we do the intermission. I'm not going to tease it yet.
You know what's interesting about him saying that, and especially since he was in a brief collaborate, apparently I can't talk tonight at all, collaboration with this cat, Kanye West, and he's the exact opposite. And Kanye West, like maybe 4 years ago, said, "I am the voice of this generation." Like, he has so much ego, and it's sort of like when
he's
this
like power of small town with his ego.
Yeah, well, but he also is brilliant, and so is this guy. But I mean, but it's just interesting if he's saying stuff like that about I'm not what 12-year-olds want to buy, and then you look over to Kanye, and he's like, I don't care how old I am and how many I know that I'm what they want to buy. It's just interesting.
This same consequence of sound piece goes on to say, following his recent beefs with Kid Cudi, Azalea Banks, and Freddie Gibbs, it'd be fun to hear Lupe talk shit for 78 minutes, but ultimately he's too busy indulging his own linguistic whims. And I think there's a little bit, I mean, whims is like, you know, that's got a certain, there's a certain angle to, yeah.
I think that's kind of nail on the head, though.
Yeah,
I mean, he kind of does. Like, it's a flight of fancy. When he gets in that, and you know, like, there's so much of this record
that... You can imagine, people talk about, like, when they get in the zone, when they're, like, editing or whatever it is, like, whatever your endeavor is, and you just get in the zone, and I think this stuff just, like, flows off him, and he just writes it out.
Yeah, I mean, flow is such a great, apt word to use when you're talking about some of the stuff, that, especially with that song Mural. Like, he is just, like, flow, and you're like, what the fuck are you talking... I don't care what you're talking about, I just want to hear it.
Yeah, I can't keep up, but it works.
Yeah, right, exactly, it's great. Well, you get into like his more political stuff. There are pieces of that in that song for sure. Like, this album is kind of frustrating to me off and on because it starts out so strong with four musical interludes.
Okay, so can I interject here?
Yeah, Mark. So you. Just heard this.
I think this is a good segue for me because I feel kind of like the outsider this week on this album, and I caveats aside here. Let me put that out there. There's been comments about the instrumentation, the types of music that he's integrating here, and I agree. It's amazing the way he's kind of pulling these sounds in to this album.
All over the place, but it's in a good way.
It's in great places.
Sprawling.
But there, basically, there are five things about this album that I absolutely love. Five things that I love about this album. The first one is the album cover. The artwork is amazing.
Which is
really cool.
Himself.
He did. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Artwork is incredible.
Fantastico.
Mm-hmm. The artwork is really good.
Lupe Picasso.
Lupe Picasso never had
was never an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh God.
The other four things, Shane, as you were about to talk about, are the seasons that are on this album, and it starts out summer, fall, winter, and spring, and they're interspersed throughout the album, and I love the interjection of these orchestrations that he puts in there.
They're really pretty.
It really breaks up the whole album.
It's cool the way it breaks it up, and they're just really pretty little minute and a half long musical interludes in and of themselves.
And again, it's got to be one of these deals where he's contractually obligated to one more album on Atlantic, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to give you the whole year. This is every season.
Well,
sit down and listen to all of it.
Maybe so. And I would need to listen to it again to see if what lies in between really kind of falls into kind of a seasonal.
I just think
composition.
I just think it's interesting. It seems that like what he did was, you know, not to beat a dead horse here, but what he did was like decide to channel that into creativity and not being necessarily just fussy with the label, which is kind of cool.
No, and I don't disagree with anything you guys have been saying about it. I think that lyrically, you know, he's doing some really interesting stuff. The way his verse flows, I think, is impressive. But, you know, when these songs go on 8 or 9 minutes long, and maybe in my mental state right now, it started to grate on me. It was just this monotonous kind of
verse.
Well,
we were saying the same thing. Ryan and I were saying this a little while ago about Mural, the song we just talked about. I mean, even I love that song. And after a little while, the minimalist stuff, which was so interesting in the beginning, and his lyrics were so interesting. But after about 5 or 6 minutes, like, okay, like, I'm ready. You can wrap it up now.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's go to something new. And I love that. I absolutely love that song. But, you know, one of the things, like, I just wanted to say real quick, like, Kevin, you keep bringing up about the fact that it's his last album for Atlantic. We can't really discuss this record unless we discuss, like, his history prior to it. I mean, the two albums prior to this. I mean,
wasn't he discovered by Jay-Z?
He wasn't discovered by Jay-Z. He actually had a deal
Jay-Z, I guess, Shepard.
Jay-Z got into Atlantic. So he had Food and Liquor, that first record, like, totally broke him, like, got him in, I think there were some Grammys.
There were some Grammys.
Peppered in there.
No, he was not. I think he was nominated for a few Grammys for that.
Slinging Grammys around.
You know what? Every single one of you can fuck off, and you know that's not what I meant.
But I think it'd be cool if it was. Like, it'd just be like, hey, here's some awards. And anyway, maybe that's how they do the Tonys.
I what is that? Just throw it. Like you get, like Oprah. You get, like a T-shirt gun.
You
and
get a Tony.
It.
I think a T-shirt.
And you
gun.
Get a Tony.
Well, and Shane, before you get into this is something that I've kind of been rolling around in my head since I was reading about this guy and his feud with Atlantic. Every unsigned artist cannot wait to be on a label, and if they have some degree of success, they hate their label. And I don't. It's entirely understand
exactly
how that happens. Well, they're the ones who got you there. I mean, yeah, you had talent for sure.
But you've never been in the middle of trying to figure that out.
And you have.
But aside from that, so we're talking about his discography. So that album did his debut album did really well, and then his next album, The Cool Superstar, which you guys all know. I don't know if you all. No, you know it right now, but in the break we'll listen to it. You're like, oh yeah, I totally know that song. I think it was in the top 10 Billboard singles, I think in 2007. And then he had this, he didn't sell, like his Atlanta got a little bit greedy with what they wanted, as far as I can tell, or from what I've heard. And then his next record, Lasers, they made him record a bunch of songs from outside producers in an attempt to make his music more commercial. That's the bullshit thing right there.
Happens a lot in hip hop.
He had a top 10 single and he sold a ton of records, his first two records. But yeah, we see a good thing when we see it. We know a good thing when we know it. Let's go ahead and bring in some outside producers and beef it up even more. So he, like, put the kibosh on that getting released. It was crazy that it almost even got released. And also, let's say this. That one other thing I want to say about this before we go and listen to a song real quick is that the guy, there's no question that the guy has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder about certain things. Like, he didn't even listen to rap. He was more of a chess player, a jazz guy, you know. Like, he doesn't fit. There's not an easy
thing comes through, I think.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. There's not an easy fit for him in that world. There's a lot of stuff that he does sometimes. Like, he can have a little dig his heels in the mud or have a little bit of anger. And a good example of digging your heels in the mud is that he was hired to perform at one of Obama's inaugural parties. And he was one of the rappers. And what he did is he did a 30-minute long. I remember when this happened, he was forcibly removed from the building by security. This is in like early 2013. Right around the inauguration. I mean, it was like an inaugural party, and he did like a 30-minute song where he just kept repeating the lyrics to a political song of his over and over and over and over again for 30 minutes till he was forcibly removed from the building.
Which he had to have expected.
Of course. That's what I'm saying. The guy, we were talking about, like, Atlantic Records and him and them being difficult. There's no question that this guy is a little difficult too.
He is difficult.
But who's to say that them acting that way upon bringing in outside producers and forcing him to do that make him more difficult?
The fuck off. I'm not saying that he was necessarily wrong, but it does seem to be a pattern that I've seen a lot. Is, you know, like, people are clawing their way, you know, to just please sign me, and then you get signed, and it's like, Yeah, fuck you, label.
Yeah, because you don't know. It's like people will say, people will, like, all the time, like, I can't. What are these musicians complaining about? They get to go on tour. And they get to go out there.
There are a lot of shitty deals out there. There are a lot of shitty contracts that are written, particularly for major labels. It does happen, and I certainly understand the phenomenon, but it's weird from an outsider perspective.
Okay, so listen, real quick, we're gonna go to a break here. We're getting the slap down from producer Mark. Oh, I'm glad you're back, producer Mark.
Yeah, he's performing his producer.
He's giving us a putting the killing us with a hatchet. I think. So I want to just play a clip from the song Body of Work, and we'll come back in after the song and we'll talk about what that song was. So this is Body of Work by Lupe. And, yeah, at this point, I'm just going to stop saying Lupe. Lupe Fiasco.
Drop me to the lobby from Heights. Then over the threshold to redeem the doorway. 14 bras like the king of Norway. 14 bras having dreams of foreplay. 14 arms, she fire. Viva la cool. If the government get it, I'm a fool. Foot ounce. Don't try to put them back together. Don't try to put them back together. Just bite my tongue so wet. Dance on the page of the dead book. Don't leave the restroom with the left foot. Flags of Tibet, 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 to death. Flesh, release the leash on the fast car. Feet on the keys, fall asleep in a Jaguar. The tip of thy sword is white. Am I night? Am I black? Am I light?
Have I been? I like how that song, there's a lot of that was one of the ones that really defines what I was singing earlier about, like, the post-apocalyptic Radiohead stuff that's going on. Like, there's this music going on in the background that you're not paying attention to, and then the lyrics stop for a second. You're like, what is that weird shit that's there? And then also he uses falsetto, like the featuring singers, instead of using a woman to come in, like there's a male falsetto. It's just really interesting.
I don't know. He said something about a jaguar, and then there was like a roar in the background.
There was
really
a jaguar.
Really kind of lost me at post-apocalyptic, because I just started thinking about The Last Man on Earth and how great that show
is. Oh, that is a great show, but I don't want to get off on that right now.
Ryan's off down the street somewhere.
No, I kind of want that a little bit, but yeah. No, it's a solid song.
That's a headphone song. Are you dying?
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want you to die.
It's cool. No, I've had a good life. It's all right.
Well... I
guess that's the end of the show.
We better.
Nah, we could replace.
No, you guys can just go on without me.
Kevin, hey, we're gonna make a call to somebody else. We're about to do a few minutes with right now. Kevin, can you make a call so we can get somebody else in to finish?
Oh, sure.
Just pull in the B team.
All right.
My understudy.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. A few minutes with. Thing about Ryan and Shane choosing some of these songs that we donut in the middle of the podcast is that they get occasionally to have a little bit of fun with these, and knowing, I feel like
you make it sound like it's usually like we're swinging a hammer, but occasionally we throw up a bone and let them have a little fun.
I just like hearing the word donut used as a verb.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, I feel like Ryan, I know how your mind works a little. I mean, we've known each other quite some time. So.
Most of my life.
Yeah, and so so when you chose the song that you chose for this week's A Few Minutes With, I can't say that I was surprised, but I also can't say that I was pleased.
Well, can you take it?
I don't know. You know what?
He won't anymore.
If I can't take it, I'm not standing near the window.
All right. Well, before we get into that, why don't we let our listeners know what exactly it is that we're going to be showcasing this week. And, of course, it is Twisted Sister's classic, We're Not Going to Take It.
So Ryan's a perfect 3 for 3 with weird fucking videos from the 80s. that he's...
Well, and I almost picked one that is a song that I like a lot more and is frankly probably a better video, but it's not funny.
It doesn't have to be funny. Yeah.
But anyway, Twisted Sister, I actually owned this record on cassette. I think I bought it in fifth or sixth grade.
They were out of 8-tracks.
But yes. Yeah, I think this was post 8-track, but...
Before 8-track, like, you just have to ask them to come over and play it for you.
That's right, yeah, on your Victrola.
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of metaphysical, crazy sci-fi stuff going on in this video, so I wouldn't put it past it.
Why don't we get into the song, play a little bit of it, and we'll come back out of it.
Physical sci-fi. That's such bullshit.
Look, if I had put a cone of incense... to the demon, there were lots of demons and stuff going on around the early 80s too at that time, and like pray to the gods of Twisted Sister, then they would have flown in their alien craft, killed my father, or not killed him, but attended to.
You know, you're making a whole lot of sense here. why don't we just go in and listen to the song, and then we'll come back out.
I think I'm going to make a lot more sense after we come back out.
All right, let's do it.
Somebody pointed out as we were watching the video that, like, this is just perfectly made for a 13-year-old. And I may have been, like, 11 or 12. But, like, I remember loving this song so much. And all of my peer group did, too. But watching it as an adult now, it does seem a little bit like I was so the target demo.
Well, and I do you remember that we, Ryan and I have a younger sister that is several years younger than Ryan. And when she was born, well, when she was little, we taught her to say, I think it was "I Wanna Rock." People would ask her, like, hey, what do you want to do today? And she'd be like, I wanna rock. Yeah, so now I'm back to doing my Easy E.
So, so the narrative of the video, for those who haven't seen it, is, you know, it's a family eating dinner, this sort of rebellious 12, 13-year-old kid says, maybe excuse, go to my room, where he commences rocking. And
on his imitation Fender guitar.
He is rocking out.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the acting in this video is not great.
Oh, come on, man. The guy who plays the father, he's got some range. He can play everything from an angry anti-rock music father to a pissed-off vice principal to a head of a camp... where he's trying to keep the campers down.
But speaking of camp, I'm pretty sure that this is there. It's one of those, like, how, because of the Disney model set in the 90s, like, all children's movies attempt to appeal to both parents on a level kids won't get and kids. I think that this video, it's gotta be where it's gonna appeal to the 12-year-old boy. But, like, to me watching it right now, I'm like, this is almost David Lynchian.
Like, well, I mean, you know, it's so over the top. It was not intended for adult eyes.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, to me, it feels like it's almost, there's some, like, for example, when he goes up in his room, he's playing guitar, and the dad's like, "What is that I hear? It's that blah blah blah." And then he goes upstairs, and
what's he call? He call it your twanger.
Yeah, the twanger, and. Which I thought formerly was a euphemism for something else, but apparently it's... And so he goes upstairs, and he opens the door when he goes... when he leaves the table, like, in a huff to go upstairs...
What is that, music?
but it cuts to the brother briefly, like his younger brother, who's like snickering at the table, like, he's gonna get it now. But it's just this tiny, like, 2 second cut. There's no reason why it's cutting to that younger brother, because all your younger brothers at the time are going to be thinking, like, they're on the side of the brother playing the guitar. They're not going to be on the side of the younger brother, like, dad's going to really tear him a new asshole now.
The thing that that struck me about this video is that house is not very well made. I don't know how long they've been living there.
People get tossed through things. So the iconic moment in that video that everybody who was around that saw that at the time remembers is, angry father saying, "What do you want to do with your life?"
And pretty much that way.
Yeah, and the rebellious kid looks up with a sneer and just says, and in a voice that's clearly not his own,
"As I want to rock."
So I did mention this, but I had to look it up to be sure. Mark Metcalf actually plays the father in this video. And he is the actor that played the character Doug Niedermeyer in Animal House. And
I thought you might be right.
A lot of those lines that he says, drop and give me 20, you're all worthless and weak, what do you want to do with your life? That's all from Animal House. So
nice.
Yeah. Just had to verify that.
I like the fact that you've brought those two things full circle, but it also makes me shed a little bit of a tear that didn't come straight from, like, the band going, "All right, these are the weird things that we
these
want
the
dad
we have
to say."
To have in the
yeah.
Video. So yes, when said 12, 13-year-old commences rocking, dad is so blown away by the rocking that he falls out the window.
He's blown out the window by the rocking where there's no, like, the guitar's not plugged into any visible amp.
Another thing that kind of concerned me a little bit about this video is that the drummers in the 1980s typically in videos would play in the rain, and the drummer here is playing in smoke. So I don't know if something is on fire. That house is built like shit. Like, it's totally possible that they should call somebody.
I'm telling you, he's trying to summon a demon. That's how Dee Snider ended up.
Yeah, it's probably built on an Indian burial ground.
There you go.
Based on the kids all turning into the band.
Sure.
which does happen later in the video. All of the members of the family, like, turn in band members.
Yeah. That's every kid's dream.
I want to read you just a little bit about this band. And let's just say that this band was around. I think this album came out in '84. They were around since the early '70s, and in some permutation or other.
When they were just a sister.
But yeah, they were twisted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until they summoned that demon.
Search for Twisted Sitter, which is a whole different.
that's the kind of one you want to watch. So it's all broken up into sections here and on Wikipedia, and it's like pre-MTV period. MTV videos decline and fall.
Over the span of a few years.
Let's just say one of the there's two things I want to read about Twisted Sister. One is that, I'll just read the sentence. They're talking about the video. You'll see. Despite being comedic in nature, the videos featured violence against parents and teachers. Again, 13-year-old wheelhouse, which placed the band under heavy criticism by conservative organizations. They were singled up by the PMRC, which, for those of you that don't know, that's the Parents Music Resource Council. They sought to censor music in the 80s. They were singled out by the PMRC in 1985. Twisted Sister songs Under the Blade and We're Not Gonna Take It were specifically mentioned in the Associated Senate hearings.
Oh, man, that's so awesome.
Snider was one of the few musicians to testify before a Senate committee. I dare anybody, go back.
That's like winning Twitter.
If you haven't seen this video, go right now, stop this, go watch the extended video on YouTube where the dad's barking, and then come back and read or listen to this and remember
to take that seriously.
That this band was called to testify before a Senate committee in 1985.
Government at work.
This is also that same era, This is also that same era where there were just lots of the examples of things like this, where not exactly like this, but like other things where there was concern that, that people would react based upon whatever the given song or movie or whatever was that was out there. And again, not to bring up one of Ryan's great impressions, but it was Dick Cavett who said, does that mean that if there's comedy on TV, there will be comedy in the streets? Like, it's just like, which I just think is a great line. So, anyway.
I want to read two more things real quick here. So, the Decline and Fall talks about their fourth studio album, Come Out and Play. It failed miserably compared to the heights that they had reached before. And then it says something about how some speculate that the failure was partially due to the song Be Cruel to Your School because of the video that was graphically offensive. But I'm going to tell you who was featured on that video of this heavy metal band. The video featured Alice Cooper, whatever, that makes sense, Brian Setzer, Billy Joel,
of course,
and Clarence Clemons, who was the saxophone player from the E Street Band. And those of you longtime listeners may be reminded of what I said last week about saxophone in rock music.
That's probably what killed him.
That 20 years later, he's like,
20 years later,
oh, Twisted Sister!
The condition he
got. Spontaneously combusted.
One other thing, it's real quick, it's one
sentence. Right, producer Mark, try to get us
it's rest. One sentence, it's one sentence. It just, again, puts it into focus how Wikipedia is just made by people that itself. Anyway, in 1986, Snyder embarked on a solo project, reportedly approaching future Iron Maiden guitarist Yannick Gers, but this did not work out. New paragraph. That's one sentence, self-contained. Why does that need to be on?
That he approached somebody?
He approached a guitar player that didn't work out.
And the other thing is, like, it doesn't say that he approached him about being in the band. He could have just walked up to the guy. Hey,
or like he could have been like, excuse me, sir.
Pardon me.
Okay, so yes, Ryan again, 80s gold. I almost...
Happy to help.
I had a good one that I was going to pull out. But I'm gonna wait.
You can pull it out later, Shane.
Oh God.
That's highly amusing. Thank you.
Oh, happy to help.
I'm still warm. I feel warm. It's cold.
I'm not going to be able to come up with 80s.
No, I have plenty of them. I'd like to tell you some right now, but I just keep waiting for you to...
Thank God the 80s produced plenty of music for us.
There are other days to ruin.
Mid 80s. Yeah, I mean, let's just say there's... Well, never mind. I'm not going to give it away. So, back to Lupe Fiasco. So, both Ryan and I wanted to talk about this song, and this is the first song that I heard off of this record. I was like, wow, this motherfucker's back. Was Deliver.
Well, and I can say this, for a little while, I was a pizza delivery guy, and that was like sort of my fallback deal. I just kept getting those. I went to 5 different pizza places, and I do remember like going to deliver, actually not that far away from where you live, but on the other side of I-35, which is the main interstate through Austin.
Me?
Yeah.
Shane?
Yeah, close to where you live.
A little east side.
It was not.
He was pinky pointing you.
And I show up at this house, and it's dark, and I knock on the door. I ring the doorbell, and nobody comes up. And so finally, I give up, and I go back to the place, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we got a call. There was a shooting there. Cops showed up like between when they ordered the pizza and when I showed up there.
Holy God!
There was a shooting there. The cops showed up. I don't know if somebody died or not, but like nobody was there.
Maybe they just shut the lights out.
By the time I got there,
Brian, I'd just like to personally apologize for that.
It
was a bad night for me.
A little bit too much Mad Dog 2020 that night. It's fine.
Maybe it's one of these deals where what they ordered on the
pizza. I did quit that job like shortly thereafter. Not that night, but like shortly thereafter, I was like, this is really not.
I like that that wasn't what did it for you. Totally. Like, you just were like, I'm going to give it another week.
It was that plus the inept management and the lack of good money.
Yeah.
But
it does, you got to add it all up.
It does kind of play in. It certainly brought that right back to me listening to this song. So, Shane.
Yeah, I think that he does a really good job in this song. Basically, the premise is, it's two two-headed hydra here. One thing is that like he's talking about how the pizza man won't deliver pizzas into his neighborhood because it's violent. And on the other hand, he's like, why? He's growing up there. He's a little kid, and it makes him feel like shit because he can't get a pizza delivered to his neighborhood. It's really affecting, and it's like a fucking knife in the gut, I think. Like, it's so...
Well, no, we're used to hearing about, like, how, you know, you can't hail a taxi or something, but, like, you know, this is a little more everyday kind of thing, but it makes sense.
That's what makes this so much more effective overall than when you hear little vignettes in gangster rap. We've talked about this before, when it starts getting... I mean, I think, Kevin, you were saying this when we were talking about NWA, is that there are definitely elements of truth, and there are elements of truth in there, but there's hyperbole, too, but you still can't really relate to it because it does at some point become so hyperbolic. And this, can I just read some? Well, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I had one little brief thing, which is just that, to me, one word that gets bandied about with regard to this record, and especially because of, like, some of the tracks we talked about earlier that are so expansive and, like, intentionally don't have expected hooks or things of that nature, like, is abstract. And this is the opposite of that. And so that's why I think...
No, this song is very focused lyrically.
Yeah, it's...
Whereas a lot of it is just kind of like a word painting.
Sure, you know? Yeah. I guess the focus of the laser focus of this... compared to the sort of sprawl of some of the other songs, I think, like, really kind of brings it home.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that's one of the things I was saying before. There are definitely, he gets down to brass tacks at a lot of these songs, but then sometimes it seems like he's having a little bit more fun, whereas, and that's what I'm saying about, you said laser focus, and that made me think of his album, Laser.
Me too.
But then you have, and then at subsequent, the album before this one, where he gets a little militant. He's having these discussions. I just want to read a little bit, and I highly encourage, if you guys listen to this clip and you like the song, or even if you don't, like, to go read these lyrics, because they're fucking heartbreaking to me. You know, he grew up in Chicago, in the south side of Chicago. So anyway, this is how you guys know what the setup is, and this is how it starts. 30-something shots from the ghetto gun, all in the ears of the ghetto young, some ghetto girls, some ghetto sons, throwing rocks at the bus and other ghetto fun. I always wondered where the ghetto from, because I'm from the ghetto, the never ghetto come. Buzz you if the bell of my ghetto rung. And if the ghetto lose, that mean a ghetto won. I mean, it's just so genius. I think it's fucking genius, man. Like, it's heart-rendering in the beginning.
Man,
like,
you're fucking right.
Throwing rocks at a bus and other ghetto fun. Like, it's just, like, it immediately puts in your head. Like, every kid or, you know, like, did... shit like that,
he's no John Bon Jovi, but he can put together a lyric or two.
That's, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, and he's not. Who is, though?
Well, yeah, we can only
John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, John Bon Jovi. There's only one. No, and honestly, like, it just, as you were reading that, I'm like, I'm just flashing back to that horrible Bon Jovi record we listened to.
Why wouldn't you flash back to that?
That's gotta be, well, because it's the polar opposite.
No, I said, why wouldn't
you? Oh, why wouldn't I? Of course.
Fucking course.
Yeah. You know, like, we did a whole lot in the back of that car or whatever. Like, anyway.
There's a lot of lyrics on here that I don't feel necessarily comfortable saying. I mean, like, I would, but
well, there's an uncomfortable amount of the N-word on this record, and, like, I don't... Oh, here's a thing that happened the other day.
Oh,
I was, all right. So I was listening to this record in preparation for this podcast, and I pull into the H-E-B near where I work. H-E-B is a local supermarket chain for those who don't live in Austin. I'm kind of blasting it. I'm smoking a cigarette. I got the window down. I saw two cops in there, and I'd had a glass of wine. I wasn't anywhere near drunk, but I'd had a glass of wine. I immediately turned it way down because I didn't want to get pulled over. Like, I don't know if that's, like, a certain... I mean, and I didn't even think about it. I was like, oh, cops are here. I can't be listening to this music.
Were you in your hoopty at the time?
I was in my car.
We should bring back hoopty.
Is a Nissan Versa, a 2010 Nissan Versa, can I get a hoopty?
Well, I've seen it, and it's super tricked out, so maybe.
But it was just weird. It was like, I didn't even think about it. Like, it was just an immediate visceral reaction. Like, oh, cops are here. I can't be listening to this.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, being a man of the streets like you are.
Oh, big time.
I could
but it was one of the songs that's like thrown out inward, like left and right, and it's like... Anyway, I can't quote, like, that is such a loaded term that...
I thought you said inward, like I-N-W-A-R-D for a second.
Can we inward, yes. Agree that we use the convention that you guys developed during the NWA podcast?
And we'll what did we call it instead?
Gentlemen?
Gentlemen. Yeah.
Oh,
gentlemen this, gentlemen that, gentlemen this, and gentlemen that. I was like, whoa, easy killer.
let's listen to a little bit of the song. We'll come back. I want to read one more little part of the second verse, but yeah, this song is it's affecting, and it's not just affecting, it's one of the few songs on this album that's I think it's just over 4 minutes long. It's the right size for a pop song. It's musically, lyrically, it hits on every level. So anyway, this song is Deliver.
So no. Hey, 30 some shots, so get up gone. All in the ears of the ghetto young. There's some ghetto girls, some ghetto sons. Throwing rocks at the bustin' of the ghetto fun. I always wonder where the ghetto from. Cause I'm from the ghetto, they never ghetto come. But you win if the bell of my ghetto rung. And if the ghetto lose, then mean the ghetto won. It's out of you, the ghetto, that's how the ghetto done. They'll keep it there and never bring the ghetto none. We'll make the ghetto tick, make the ghetto run. We'll make the ghetto sick, make the ghetto dumb. These niggas off that ghetto being, that ghetto rhyme and that ghetto bass with my ghetto drums, my ghetto words and these ghetto problems, these ghetto songs. What a piece of man don't come here no more. Too much dope, too many niggas on the poach. So the piece of man don't approach, no dope, no. Piece of man don't come here no more. Too many niggas on the block, too many niggas getting shot. So the piece of man don't stop. Piece of man don't come here no more. Too many niggas getting raw. Niggas don't wanna stop us. Niggas ain't got no job. Blah, blah, blah. Piece of man don't come here no more. Deliver. Deliver. Yeah.
So, can I take your order?
For a pizza?
Really?
Neighborhood? Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll get delivered too.
I suspect we would.
So, I chimed in earlier and I talked about the five things that I liked about this album, and it was a little cynical, I agree. And I think the environment that I was in when I listened to it and the mood that I was in when I listened to it, I completely missed this, and I missed the subtleties of this song. And I actually liked it, listening to it again.
I think, I made a note, we were talking about this during the break, and like one of my notes was, like Kevin was saying something like, it doesn't reward, you can't passively listen to this and still get it.
I think in general, this art, and like Lupe Fiasco is like that, but yeah.
Yeah, that's certainly what I'm saying. I wasn't just talking about that song, I'm saying like him in general.
Well, you said while we were listening to it, and I think like affected me the most is that this song sounds like it's written from a little kid's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And that's what I was... I mean, it's and that's one of the coolest things about this.
You know, one of the most exciting things when you're, like, 9, 10, 11 years old is getting pizza delivered to your house.
Right. And that's why... But you have this... There's
pizza
this,
man's here!
We could do this... I literally think we could do this. That's like, ice cream man!
Kinda.
Think Ryan wants to rock.
I do want to rock.
Watch, so. In a few minutes from now, we're going to have like a knock on the garage door like, pizza man. Papa John's.
Flowers.
No, but there, I literally think
Land
that...
Shark.
Thanks. We could do a whole show. I was thinking Landshark when I said that. So I think we could do a whole show on just that song alone. It's that good. It's that brilliant. Those lyrics are some of the best. Like,
can you imagine how bummed out you'd be if you found out that your neighborhood was so dangerous? If you're 10, and you found out your neighborhood was so dangerous that, like, they wouldn't even deliver pizza there anymore.
Honestly, man, this is going to be kind of a weird thing, and I don't want to go off on this for too long, but my, I grew up in a small town. I don't want to talk about it, but there were actually projects there, and one of my mom's best friends, they had, like, this house cleaning business. She lived in these projects, and, one day, me and her two sons were running around with, and I was like probably 7, with two of the black kids that lived there, and we were running around, and the ice cream man came by, and we were like, "Ice cream man!" And we went, and like I got money and ice cream. We heard him, and then we ran up, and the guy got out and he saw the two kids. He's like, "Oh no, you guys just always stand in here and try to get ice cream from us. Like, no, like I'm not gonna play this game anymore." And I was like, and I pulled out money. I was like, "But I have money." And he's like, "Oh, okay." But I was like, it was the similar, like seeing that. I've seen that stuff when you're a little kid and see that stuff happen. You know, like it was a crazy thing.
You just made me nostalgic for Froze Toes. Do you remember Froze Toes?
No, I have no idea.
Froze Toes were like a popsicle in the shape of a foot with a bubble gum,
like a
gumball.
Wait,
yeah. Big toe was.
Yeah.
So like this after you eat the ice cream, you
get a piece of gum. Like, and you can, like...
And it's usually, like super hard. Like, it break your...
Yeah, I was going to say, like, gum is not...
Gum. You know, like, it's been in a, frozen condition. But anyway, like,
I don't know what froze toes are. I just know ice cream is good. And especially when you're running around and they give it to you when you have money.
Profound.
Yeah, I am telling you. That's why I pick stuff like this, motherfucker.
No, thank you for doing so. Like, it's actually a terrific record that I don't know if I'm going to...
I got what you were saying, but again, like I bring this up a lot. Like there are certain songs of certain albums that I want to put on a playlist.
Yeah,
like I will listen to this song. Like that's it. And I was saying this before the break. Like this song in particular, it's got that message in there, but it doesn't sound preachy, and the music is just great. And some of these songs are the same thing. Like some of them are a little too intense. Like they make my blood pressure feel. They make me feel like I'm going to have a heart attack because, he's just, you know what I'm saying? Like it's.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think that was a lot of what was really bothering me was that.
Oh, so.
There was so much tension.
Yeah, you're not listening to Jimmy Buffett here, Mark. Like, oh, wait, why hasn't anybody pulled up a Jimmy Buffett record for this fucking show?
We ain't done yet. Anyway, I didn't really share anything from the Pitchfork take on this because they didn't do a historic 180 as they have occasionally done. But one line that I did find particularly interesting that kind of encapsulated their take on Lupe Fiasco's career was that they said that the author of this piece said he dives back into rapping for its own sake. Like it's a big dusty novel he's been waiting to pick back up for years. And for whatever reason, like it seems like he does have lots of enthusiasm to offer here.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree.
That's a yay music writer for once. Had a really astute
music writer later on in the review kind of goes dick, but
well, it doesn't matter if he goes dick or not. That's just a really well written thing.
No, I think it's interesting. He nitpicks later, but
I can nitpick about this record too.
Sure. At any rate, Shane, thanks for putting it out there.
Oh yeah,
and Kevin, you've got our current affair.
Yeah, what are we going to listen to? What's coming up right here?
Yeah. So, anyway, in an undying, unending quest now for something different, we're gonna listen to the trending UK band called The Cribs. They've got a track out called "Burning for No One." That's been getting a lot of indie airplay. And let's find out what happens when four indie guys get washed up on a desert island. Wait, just an island.
Our stories are real.
A current affair.
Our stories are original.
Morning Pulitzer.
We have no rules here. If you want to see a story that answers the question, no, he didn't do that, did he? Watch a current affair.
Watch you.
So that was called Hipster Swinging with Pigs.
Was that the name of the song, really?
No. The name of the band is...
It was Hipsters on a Beach Swinging with Pigs.
Yeah, it's the name of the band is the Cribs, and that's a song called Burning for No One. That is correct.
No, it's a decent song.
Like, yeah, it's a decent song. Yeah,
not necessarily super memorable, but a decent song.
No, but it's a decent song.
Decent song. I'm glad that you guys said that. Like, highly amusing video. This is what I felt about the song. It was a decent song, and I would enjoy hearing it again, but this is what I felt about it. If I were at Old Navy and that song were playing, and I would be like, that's a good song. I gotta ask the lady when I'm checking out if she can find out what that song is for me. And then I forget to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how that song.
That's what.
That's why you need the Shazam app on your phone.
Here's a little bit of background about the Cribs. Johnny Marr was in that band for 3 years.
Really?
What? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, I realize that you should have told us this earlier.
I know, but it's more fun to fuck with you this way. So, like,
I mean, yeah. Perfectly pleasant.
He's clearly not in that bad now.
No, he's not.
Perfectly pleasant song. Those guys are lots younger than Johnny Marr.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so are the Pigs.
In every band for, like, 10 seconds.
He was in that band for 3 years, though. Like,
he was in
Modest Mouse.
Modest Mouse.
For a couple years. No, he was in The for like 15 years. He was in there for a long. He was in there for a long time.
Yeah. Anyway, it's trying to be funny
or something. I don't know.
And yeah, so basically, if you go see the, and please, you know, pull up the video at your leisure. But the thing about
enjoying hipsters in skinny jeans swimming with pigs on an island. This is. Clearly the video.
That is not an exaggeration.
It's quite... I thought it was quite precious. I thought it was really amusing. Yeah. And and they're going to get rescued by a boat, and one of the guys goes, just go on, I had this pig family to take care of. Because there's lots of little baby pigs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you think they're marooned, and they find this feral pig, you think they're going to eat it, but no, it has babies.
Yeah, and then they just pet it.
They just pet it. They hang out, the pig's on its side, and they're just petting its
own. Swimming with a pig.
Yeah. I'm not really swimming. Sure, also, I'm not really sure what any of that has to do with Burning for No One, but they weren't able to make fire, so maybe that's what it's about.
And Burning for No One?
Well, they were trying to light a fire right by the ocean.
Yeah,
maybe it's like, a companion piece to Blue Easter Cult's
"Burning for You." Burning for You.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah.
So you know, if you play them back to back, you'll actually understand it.
It's the effete British counterpoint to that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the Cribs. That is like as Shane said. It's a
God. Every time you say the Cribs, I keep thinking like
the Crips.
You're talking about that show Cribs on MTV.
Like, no, like people who are too rich for their own good.
Yeah, well, which is
funny because
silly houses with
the guys in this video are homeless.
Well, in the video, they are.
Well, Well, no, but he's right. Yeah. See, we're circling back to irony again.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So, yeah.
And it's purported fleeting relevancy.
Well, I don't know how fleeting it was. I was just saying at one time, there was a little more traction.
At a very specific time in the 90s, irony was relevant.
No, more relevant.
More relevant than it is.
I challenge anyone here right now to go back and watch Daria or go back and watch Reality Bites.
Daria.
Sorry, whatever the fuck it was called. D-A-R-I-A.
He was saying that ironically.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
You idiot.
Well, the most ironic thing about the 90s was that the song Ironic was not actually about ironic things. It was things that just sucked.
Yeah, I read this piece where recently this guy was taking issue with the fact that these things weren't ironic, and he's actually a language professor. But I read his whole piece, and at the end of it, I was like, no.
So isn't that ironic?
Yeah. See, that's more ironic than the shit that he was saying.
I just think it's ironic that you call your song ironic and Rain on Your Wedding Day is not ironic. It just sucks.
No, there is one time in that video, though, where it is ironic. The guy that was afraid of flying his whole life, and then he finally got on a plane and flew and it crashed.
That would be
ironic. That's ironic.
That's genuinely
There's
ironic.
One
but
instance.
Hey, man, if you've got a bunch of spoons and all you want is a knife, that's not ironic.
No, a black fly on your Chardonnay. That's not ironic.
That
in any
sucks,
way.
Man.
Wowee.
Sorry, Alanis. Anyway, we should be.
What an intelligent segue we made there.
It's always intelligent on this show. Haven't you? You were gone for one fucking week and you forgot this?
So, yeah. So, a couple of things. I guess one is that next week.
We're kind of not sure what we're going to be doing.
Yeah,
we're going to be doing something.
Yeah, there's some interesting things happening in Austin, and we may try to take a bite out of a little bit of that and share some of that with you.
I love how you're being coy, saying there's a
because we don't really.
No. But he's being coy when he says is that there's a few interesting things happening in Austin. Where the first 20 minutes of the show we talked about what's happening.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, everybody. Yeah.
The next 500 hours of Austin are just. A big melee of bullshit.
It's going to be. It has potential to be pretty intense. But what we'd like to do, we'll just see if we can pull together, and if it comes together, at the very least, it'll be a giant adventure, and the fruits of which we'll gladly share.
Fruits.
Yeah. So thank you guys for listening to the Lupe.
Not the loopy.
Lupe. It says L-O-O-P-A-Y. Lupe.
I don't know why that's the hard part of that guy's name.
Lupe. That's what I'm saying. All right. Thank you guys for listening.
Fiasco record.
All right. All right. Let's get out of here. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.